navigating the ups and downs of business, creating a recession-proof business, and managing all of the ebbs and flows, the people issues, the organizational stuff. This is one of our Getting Real episodes. Listen in as we get real with Jack Real. That's awesome. You should be on every week, right? Hi, everyone. I'm Bill Gallagher, scaling coach, host of the show, and your friendly neighborhood scaling up coach. You can find hundreds of episodes just like these at scalingcoach.com, along with the downloads of our tools, notes, all that kind of thing. Links at scalingcoach.com. These Getting Real episodes are where we explore with a particular leader about how their leadership has been shaped over time with the growth of their business. What are the lucky breaks that they've had? What are the big setbacks and breakdowns? How have they handled that? What are the things that have frightened or surprised them as they've gone? And how have they grown and developed as leaders? So we'll be getting into all that and more in just a minute with Jack Real. I want to remind everyone that this episode is sponsored by the Bay Area Entrepreneurs Chapters. The Entrepreneurs Organization, commonly known as EO, is a member-led organization for entrepreneurs to find peers, to connect, to grow, and learn with. And I'm proud to have been a member of this group for over 20 years now, through several different companies and in a lot of different roles within the organization. The EO members of the Bay Area are connected and supported to over 14,000 across 61 countries worldwide. And that gives them access to a world of entrepreneurship that is really hard to compare with. If you'd like to apply for membership or to get more information, just visit eonetwork.org or drop us a note and we'll hook you up, connect you there. So eonetwork.org. Listen in now as we talk with Jack Real about his story and his business and like that. So welcome to the show, Jack.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for having me.
So folks should know that Jack, well, he'll tell more of his story, but he's in the automotive retail business. So not cars, but the well, parts and service and that kind of thing for cars, right?
Correct.
Awesome. So Jack, talk about, I think this is a good place to start. Start with when you first thought that you should be an entrepreneur. What was that moment and what was your life like and like that?
Wow. It's way back when I was like 8. We were from poor family. You know, it was a welfare thing. I had dollar shoes that used to rip and tear, and my feet would poke out after a couple of days. So I had this internal need to get past all that. And I felt like if it was going to happen, it was going to be up to hard work. And so I remember being 10, mowing lawns for people. I would make little index cards and put them on everybody's doorsteps and saying, look, I'll mow your lawn for 10 bucks or whatever it was. I always had that entrepreneur kind of spirit. And man, I tell you, I had so many ideas when I was running through school that, yeah, it was definitely a busy mind that I had.
So you had this thing in it didn't come from an entrepreneurial family, but had some hustle and saw that as a way out for yourself.
Yeah, my next door neighbor, he was a couple years older than me, and he had a little too. We used to go out to the flea markets on the weekends, and I mean, I'm 16 years old, and I was out there wheeling and dealing, you know, trying to make a buck, and we were doing everything from selling wax products for shining up people's cars or, you know, other kind of retail odds and ends, just trying to make the flea market scene. We'd buy something and we'd say we can make money on this and flip it. Crazy sort of deals that we made. And that was an exciting time. And I think that kept my curiosity blooming. And as I got into college, yeah, that spread like wildfire. I had so many little businesses in college that, surprised I even got into the car business. I was kind of by accident, if you will. That's some other thing.
You went to a good school. Talk about what you studied and why and what you were thinking about in the college years.
Well, I went to SC.
USC.
The entrepreneur program. However, my grades weren't so good. And one of the challenges I was obviously in sports, and then I had to work because, you know, scholarship doesn't cover everything. Right. So I had a full-time job the entire time at school. So we, a couple of friends in the dorms, you know, they wanted their cars fixed, and so I would work on their cars, and I had a little mechanic business going. And then I had the auto teaching products from when I was in high school, and so I had done a car wash and detail shop in Beverly Hills for a time, and so I had some friends team up with me on that. And my thought was, well, you know, this is what I want to do. Then I got lucky, and I took my scholarship money and went down, bought a whole bunch of baseball cards, and went down to Costco's Club, I think they called it, and went out to a trade show that weekend, and I doubled my money in 3 days. And I was like, well, this is the industry for me. So I started speculating on, you know, autographs and sports memorabilia. And it was sort of like stock market, but it was tangible. It was cash. It was quick deals. And I found a lot of excitement in that. Recession hit back in 92. That industry got hit pretty hard. And I was coming out of college at that time. And that's when I got in the automotive business.
So, and you worked your way through that, learning something along the way, which I think is really interesting. So often you see people going into stuff knowing almost nothing. And maybe sometimes that's for the best, because you wouldn't maybe pursue it if you didn't. But in your case, you learned a little something about it, washing cars and so on, right?
Well, one of the challenges of like going into buying a truckload of baseball cards and trying to flip them, you think that you can do that over and over again. And so, you know, learning the hard way is making deals with all the price clubs and the smart and finals and say, hey, you know, give me first call when this product hits, and I'll run down and I'll buy all you got, and I'll throw you a couple bucks for a tip. And I'm speculating that, hey, I'm going to buy $10,000 worth of stuff, and then I turn around on the weekend and double it. And then I find that there's no demand for this product, and all of a sudden I just lost everything I just invested in, or this product's not going to move like I thought it was going to be. And yeah, you know, you learn the hard way, and you know, sometimes you make easy money, then sometimes you have to learn the hard lesson that, you know, if it was so easy, everybody would do it.
Yeah. So you're moving your way through this. So when did you actually start? You started learning your way through working in an auto dealership. When did you make that jump and actually buy into or start the auto business?
Well, when I went to a Lexus dealership and I started as a car washer.
Yeah.
And I admired my stepbrother because he was in the service department.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, sitting there going, oh, I used to run companies, and why am I washing cars and that sort of thing? And he enlightened me that, you know, if you're the go-to guy and you're the one that people come to solve problems, you're going to advance in this business, because there's a lot of people that you come to and say, hey, I need this car done by 5 o'clock. And you'll hear the excuse, oh, well, you know, there's not enough hours in the day, or I got other things I'm working on and it's not going to happen. They want to hear, sure, boss, I got it handled. And when you are the go-to guy, then everybody likes you, then everybody comes to you. And so that was my goal. My goal was to, you know, make all the promises, figure out how to keep them. And case in point, we had a used car dealer. And I remember that he goes, you know, Jack, this customer's going to be in first thing in the morning. So before we leave tonight, you know, I need the brakes done. I need it detailed. I need it all shined up. I look at the clock at 55 and we close at 8. And there's just no way in hell it's going to happen in 5 minutes. But I know that if I act like I'm working on it and I come in early at 7 a.m., by the time he gets in at 10 o'clock, he doesn't care if I worked on it all night or if I come in the morning. As long as it's sitting shiny, ready to go in front of his office when he wakes up in the morning, that's the difference between, you know, being successful in this business and not being successful in this business.
So give folks a picture about that you have today. How locations, people, give, tell us a little bit what the business looks like.
Well, nowadays, I've got a couple retail stores. We, with COVID, we have a mobile business that's on hold. And then I've got a marketing company, which helps dealers like me through their accounting, insurance, marketing, website development, that kind of thing. So basically, have a little side business where we offer franchise services to non-franchise companies. You know, we started as I was a franchisee for a number of years and had a lot of benefits and learned a lot from that. But sometimes the franchisee business model isn't right for everyone. And I found that I wanted to be independent, not share all my efforts and hard work with friends of the world and that kind of thing.
So you have two stores that are independent, started as franchise operations before you went off on your own. And you do what kinds of things in those stores?
Well, we do auto repair, maintenance, oil changes, tires, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So basically everything but Smog.
So full service mechanical company, automotive repair, just not Smog.
Correct. We're your one-stop shop. We like to say we're your neighborhood dealership alternative. We can handle all the cars in your garage. You don't have to go to the dealer. So
nice. And the and it does seem like the Smog is a specialty in itself. I mean, there are shops that just do Smog, like oil changes, all day long.
Correct. And it's a specialized business, and they got their own business format and equipment needs and space needs. And it's a lot easier to separate from retail and broken down cars and that kind of thing. So
when you think over your career in this business, what do you feel like has been, or even before you got into it, your luckiest break?
Well, I remember I was a service manager at the Ford dealership, and they brought me in to teach them about tires and brakes. They had this thing called the Around the World program, and they didn't really understand the tire business, oil change, and that kind of thing. And so as I was at the dealership, and I'm trying to teach, people who've worked on Fords their entire life, and they say, hey, kid, how old are you? And I said, I'm 30. And he goes, I've been here 30 years. I don't do oil changes. Or, they say, well, you can tell us we're going to do tires, but we don't do tires here. It was like pulling the cart uphill. It was just awesome. And so when the Firestone recall happened back in 2000, I remember all the Ford Explorers having the blowouts and 290 people died and that sort of thing. And I remember all the news people coming and, all the customers and, the employees were going, Jack, what are you going to do? And, Ford gave me a canned statement saying, look, there's nothing wrong with the tires. There's nothing wrong with our vehicles. And, it felt wrong to me. And, this is a good time to kind of get back in the tire business. And so I put out my resumes. And luckily, one gentleman received it. And he called me over for an interview the next day. And I went there and he goes, hey, Jack, sort of like divine intervention. I was sitting by my bed last night. I was thinking about closing the store. We've been struggling. I used to have a whole bunch of gas stations, and I went into auto repair and had all these auto repair shops. And this last night, I was just about to close it down when I got your resume. He goes, I know it's divine, and you're the person that I'm looking for. So I went down. We did pretty much a full day interview, and I saw that, cars were coming in with flat tires and bald on the edges, and they were just pumping up with air and sending them on their way. And I'm like sitting there, God, this is a gold mine. Why aren't you guys selling tires and doing work on these cars? Why are you just like letting all this stuff just get through right through your hands? And he says, we have the right people. And he says, just don't wait until you're 65 like me to find your replacement. And I said, well, Jesus, I'm here. So let me get this handled. But I want to own it. And the Big O model, and how they grew to be the largest tire retailer in North America, was they had a business plan set up where they would take their young manager and give them an incentive and say, hey, look, you know, you work the store like you own it. Give us good 5 years. We'll give you a percentage of the business. And that allows us, you know, the other owners to expand, find other locations, worry about the finance, the operations, and that sort of thing. And I explained to him, I go, I want that program. And this is made for me. And I'd love to be a partner. And he says, you raise our business in a year, we'll make you a partner. And that was my big break because, yeah, we really kicked ass that year and business skyrocketed. And a lot of that had to do with Firestone Recall and the business boom from that. And, you know, we just sold every tire that we could find. And but the difference between our operation and other operations
that year, right? I had a Ford Explorer at that time, and we got 4 new tires when they started recall.
You know, we were so good, we were doing fine. So it was on every car, and we were literally buying 1,900 tires and truckloads, and parking them along the street and paying meters all day long. So we were selling every tire that we could get our hands on. It was a, you know, 6.5 million tires had to be replaced, and Firestone was paying the bill on it. So that was a great opportunity for me to be right there on the ground floor, to have access to the product, because, you know, I knew where to get it. And, you know, what we did well is we took care of people well. We were very efficient. We were, you know, the easy way to get stuff taken care of. And because of that, we kept that business. And most places, and it went back to normal, where we, you know, tripled, quadrupled our business, and then we maintained it. So
talk then about what's been the biggest hardship or setback that you've had to go through so far.
Well, at some point, I had the bright idea of buying my partner out and being on my own. And as the responsibilities came that, you know, I'm responsible for everything and don't have that my side to help me with some of the problems and the time management of all the things that we had to deal with. Yeah, you know, it was pretty much too much. And then my thought was that, hey, you know, I saw other people with multi-unit locations. When I expand, and as I would see opportunities develop, or I'd, you know, be helping other people with their businesses, and then, you know, they want to look for an exit strategy, I saw opportunities in allowing them to get out and for me to gain more hold and to grow our footprint. Challenge with that is that, you know, you don't have necessarily the managers in place, and maybe some of the reasons that their businesses were struggling because they didn't have good personnel or adequate personnel. And I was fulfilling some of that need, but the reality is that at a certain point, if you don't have the people in place, you know, it doesn't matter what kind of business you have, you're only as good as your people.
Do you have a primary regret at this point, or something like, oh, I walked away from a business, or I chose wrongly?
Yeah. I found this beautiful building. It was huge. And I thought, well, gee, you know, if I can fill this building, I saw a huge dollar signs. Challenges is that, you know, the rent factor increases quite a bit the bigger the building is, and you still have, you know, overhead with people and advertising and other issues to deal with on the day to day. And the challenge is that, you know, you might be planning for that growth in 5, 10, 20 years, but that first 2, 3, 4 years, those are really hard. Most businesses fail in the first couple years for a reason. And, you know, to take a new business that started from scratch and to do the marketing and the advertising and to try to make stuff happen, it cannibalizes some of the other businesses that, you know, you're starting to take money from one company to pay for the loss. And then you start getting that slippery slope that, you know, now you're working 4 times harder, but you're not making anything. Mm-hmm.
If you think about how your leadership has developed over time, what do you notice as you think about yourself? What have you gotten good at, and what are you still struggling with?
I've always been a numbers guy. So I've always known that, you know, if you manage the numbers, good things happen. The challenge is that consistency employees sometimes is where it's been the hardest. And if you have a certain percentage of your employees turning over, you know, maybe that lower 20% of the rung there, it takes a while for people to get up to speed. You know, I've got 20, you know, 30 years experience in this stuff. So it comes naturally to me, but where somebody who's only got a year experience or maybe none, you're trying to train them from scratch, the expectations that they have to come in, and what the football person, those are pretty high expectations. And knowing that, you know, we have bills and payroll due and all this other stuff that's happening, we put a lot of pressure on young people. And I don't think I had that much pressure on myself initially, because we were doing so well that these kind of issues, you know, weren't something that was into my day-to-day. My day-to-day was concentrating on putting the numbers up. And if I did that, it's not necessarily the case that other people think that way. So you have to kind of nurture, train. And I think I've been quite patient and learned that, you know, if everybody was like me, then there wouldn't be, they would have my job and not necessarily be working for me, get my point. So.
So what are you working on or towards now? Do you have any big long-term goals at this point?
The mobile business, especially nowadays, I think that the future in this business is convenience. You know, part of dropping off the car, you know, having it in the shop for a couple of days, you know, a lot of times, you know, now we can literally put the shop on a truck, send it out to somebody's house, and we can repair the car in the driveway, and you never even have to leave the office or have to, you know, take the, you know, kids out of the house and put them in the car. We can make a lot of things pretty convenient. The challenge is that the customers and the buying public haven't quite caught on to that yet. And I think that people are still more into the traditional brick and mortar, you know, bring the car into the shop. And I got a feeling at some point that's going to evolve. And I'd like to be in that space when it does. And so I do have visions of where I want the company to be forward thinking. You know, we've already got the app set up for mobile tires and mobile brakes or oil change or other kind of maintenance, you know, check engine light repairs. We can do all that stuff in the field now. And that saves on inventory. You know, you can bring the tire right from the warehouse. I don't have to stock, you know, 3,000 tires in a building. It's like on demand. And then you don't have to pay for the footprint in the real estate. You know, part of store failures is, you know, the huge rent factor. When you're paying $15,000 a month rent, but, you know, you got a truck that's bought and paid for, it's a lot more scale. I think that having a lot of trucks out there as opposed to a lot of dealerships might be a better way of running a business in the future.
It's definitely an interesting idea. And one of the scaling success stories with one of my clients has been a mobile mechanic business that we help scale across the country. And they put crews in many cities before being sold to a larger group. But they weren't going to the end user consumer. They were going to body and paint shops. So if you had a collision repair on the car and you needed to reconnect systems, hook back up a radiator, reconnect airbags, all kinds of things like that to get things interconnected as the body shop would be finishing up, instead of sending that to the dealership back and forth, which is the more typical thing in that world, this company would come on site and their guy would show up with a truck and the appropriate tools and special things and connect it up, which was outside the body shop. And really, it just saved time and hassle factor for the body shop. So super lucrative business.
Well, I think tire is a logical place and a logical space to be in because, you know, it's a drag to, you know, waste a day to bring the car into the shop and four tires, people don't want to spend $1,000. It's a frustrating thing. Our company, we can allow people to, purchase on their cell phone. They don't even have to talk to salesmen. They can schedule the time to come out, and it's done in a 2-hour window, and it's basically seamless.
Right. Come to your office, come to your home. They
sent me the car key. So, but to get it scalable and to get people and to get it in different cities and different zip codes and different areas, it takes a lot of work, and we're not quite there yet. I got a feeling this is going to take a few years, but once we get it going, that's where, I'd like to see that baby grow.
Nice. So before we get too much further, I want to remind our listeners and viewers that this episode is sponsored by the Bay Area Entrepreneurs Organization chapters. We're known as EO, and this is a member-led organization that is really the best place for entrepreneurs to find peers to connect, learn, and grow with, to master their business and develop themselves as leaders over time. I'm very proud to have been a member with EO for over 20 years now in a variety of leadership roles and several different companies. Our EO members in the Bay Area are supported and connected with the other chapters, plus 14,000 members around 61 countries across the world. And that really helps them to deal with all kinds of things. You need something, someday you're going to travel somewhere again, but you find yourself somewhere and you need a connection or you need a resource in another country. EO members are well known for having something we call intimacy, where you reach out to someone and they recognize you as a peer, as a friend, and are immediately welcoming and helpful to you. So that's something that the organization is really known for. It's really unique to have that kind of support network. EONetwork.org is the place to go if you'd like more information or to apply for membership. So go check out EONetwork.org. So, Jack, as we kind of continue and start to wrap up our conversation, what do you think is next for you? Like, what are you grappling with now? How do you see yourself transitioning over the next year as a new normal emerges, as we start to get on the other side of the pandemic slowly but surely?
Well, fortunately, business is up and we're doing good. And managing our people, are striving more effective on the phones. We're revamping our website. We're going to go to our 2.0 platform. And I feel that we were pretty innovative about 5 or 10 years ago. And most of our competitors have caught up to us in our online presence and started to pass us. So we're starting to invest there. Our people are learning well that, we get a certain number of calls. It's about earning a certain number of hits. We get a certain number of visits. We move a certain number of units. It all works. And as long as everybody knows what their responsibilities are, our business is going to continue to do well.
It's really great. Do you want to give a shout out to, is there a website or something that people can go to read more about your business?
Sure. SF Car Care, that's SF, like San Francisco, carcare.com. And, you can schedule alignments on listing. We have buy three, get the fourth free, sales on tires perpetually up to $100 off. And we do complete auto repair, oil change, maintenance, whatever your wants and needs are.
Awesome. So, and we're putting that in the crawl right now. We'll put it in the show notes as well. Find more, connect with Jack at sfcarcare.com. And there's all kinds of usual specials. So whatever you need, starting from tires through all the rest of the typical auto care. Thanks so much, Jack, for joining us, for coming on the show and sharing a little bit of your story and history and trials and tribulations with us. I want to remind our listeners, viewers, that if our show helped you, share it with somebody else so that they can get some value out of it, too. If you like and subscribe the show, you'll get updates from us every week. You can find us wherever you go to get your podcast recordings on YouTube, on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever like that. And if you subscribe, you'll get those updates every week.
We're doing three shows a week now, a tip show on Tuesday, a deep dive with a guru on Wednesday, and then on Sundays and live, we're putting out our Getting Real episodes with entrepreneurs talking about the things that they've dealt with along the way in whatever line of business they're in. I want to give special thanks to Vern Harnish, author and creator of the Scaling Up Framework and the Rockefeller Habits that led into it. Our show is produced by Lucy Summers, who gets the guests ready and prepared and schedules things and promotes the show and gets things out. The audio is edited by Albert Burge at Podfly Productions, and our show notes are written up and compiled by Ayn Cardina, proofread by Kim McGowan. Thanks again, everyone, for listening. Keep scaling up.